All right. I'd like to call to order the March 18th, 2021 Stormwater Utility Commission meeting. I'd like to thank everyone for taking the time to join us this evening via Zoom. This meeting is taking place online to comply with the ongoing social distancing requirements and ensure the community's ability to participate. Irina, can I please have a roll call of the commissioners?
Commissioner Brown?
Here.
Commissioner Mattson?
Present.
Vice Chair Parker?
Here.
Commissioner Thomas?
Present.
Chair Kufari?
Present. Thank you, Irina.
You're welcome. Let the record show we have a quorum.
All right. I'm going to speed through these welcome remarks as per custom. Again, I'd like to thank you all for taking the time to join us. Clearly, tonight's meeting is going to be a bit different than our regular in-person meetings. We still maintain the regular order of business, so the meeting format will remain unchanged. In order to participate, one must be logged in or linked into Zoom directly by computer or telephone. The link can be found on the town's website under Meeting and Agenda, Stormwater Utility. Click on the agenda link. The Zoom link is in the header. For those who are unfamiliar with the Zoom software, I'd like to provide a quick overview on how to participate. Everyone's microphone, except for the commission and the individual that has the floor, will be muted throughout the entire meeting to ensure as smooth and efficient meeting as possible. Only select staff can turn on your microphone at the appropriate time if you'd like to ask a question or provide comments. I will do my best to let everyone know when it is appropriate to raise your hand for a particular agenda item. If you wish to address the commission on any agenda item or during call to the audience, please raise your hand only when I announce it is appropriate to do so. There are two ways to do this. For those participating on any platform other than by phone, find and select the participants icon by scrolling your cursor over the bottom of the screen. This will open a dialog box that lists all participants in the meeting. Scroll down until you find your name and select your name. Once your name is selected, a second box will pop up where you have the option to raise your hand. For those participating via phone, press *9 to raise your hand. Please wait to raise your hand until the appropriate agenda item has been announced and after I announce the opportunity to do so. Otherwise, we will not be able to discern which topic that you wish to address in relation to the agenda. Our aim is to proceed in a timely and efficient manner. Once your hand is raised, staff will be alerted to your request to speak. This applies to the audience, staff, and members of the Stormwater Utility Commission. So please raise your hand if you have a question or comment after I announce the appropriate time to do so. At that appropriate time, I will call on those with their hands raised to provide questions or comments. I will then announce your name and staff will unmute your access so you can speak. Please make sure you are not also muted on your personal device. Please review the meeting agenda so you know the item on which you'd like to speak. Please don't raise your hand until we have made it to that agenda item. As with all Stormwater Utility Commission meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident. Also, speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes. A timer will be used as with in-person meetings, and we ask that you please respect the 3-minute limit. Let's move on. At this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the commission on any issue not listed on today's agenda. A reminder that when you are recognized at the meeting by the chair, your microphone will be unmuted by a member of staff and you will have 3 minutes to speak before your microphone is again muted. Irina, do we have any call to the audience members?
We do not have any requests to speak at this time.
All right. I will move on to the next agenda item. And that council liaison comments, and I turn it over to Mr. Green.
I have nothing to add today.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Green, for your comments. The next agenda item is the director's report. Reminder that this is only informational. Mr. Spiker, I'd like to turn it over to you.
Thank you, Chair Kufari and commissioners. I appreciate everybody stepping away from the first four playing games of the basketball tournament today. So again, thank you. First off, I'd like to recognize we've got a new commissioner joining us for the first time today, Mr. William Ed Thomas. Again, can you please help me welcome Mr. Thomas to the commission with just a little golf clap would be sufficient. And again, much appreciate your efforts, Ed, for joining us. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Secondly, the commission asked for an update on the Bighorn fire at the last commission meeting. We don't really have anything of substance to present, so we withheld that as a staff report. We have still been monitoring the area along with our regional partners. We haven't had any significant flows to date in the Oro Valley watersheds anyway, but we continue to prepare for the upcoming monsoon season and any potential flooding that might come down from the mountaintop. In addition, we are expecting a monsoon update or forecast in April. We can try to present that at the next commission meeting with some additional findings should anything of relevance become known. So look for that in upcoming meetings. Lastly, I wanted to say thank you for all the commissioners who provided comments on the strategic leadership plan. Apologize for the quick turnaround on that, but I sincerely appreciate your efforts in getting that back to us. Those have been forwarded on to the town manager and the mayor for their consideration. So again, thank you guys. And that's the end of my director's report for now.
Thank you, Mr. Spiker. At this time, I would like to move on to the first agenda item, the review and approval of the January 21st, 2021 meeting minutes. Is there a motion to approve, or are there any changes that anyone had?
They are, as I recall them, Chairman.
I will make a motion to approve.
Second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, so moved.
Chair Kufari, could you tell me the mover and the seconder, please?
The mover was myself, and I believe the seconder was Mr. Mattson.
No, it was, I think.
David?
Yeah, I did, but it doesn't David. Matter. All right.
It only matters for my...
for your records. Yeah, I understand. I did.
Thank you very much. Okay. You're all set, Mr. Kufari?
Yeah. Did it freeze up?
Yes, it did, actually.
I was moving on. Okay, all right. Moving on to agenda item number two, recognition of outgoing Stormwater Commissioner Jack Stinnett. I turn it over to you, Mr. Spiker.
Thank you, Chair Kufari. Commissioner Stinnett has moved on from the Stormwater Utility Commission after 2 years of service. A little background on Jack. Upon graduation from the U.S. Naval Academy, Jack made his way into engineering and management in the nuclear power industry, then onto some automotive and engine components work, and finally ending his career as the president and CEO of Morris Material Handling in Milwaukee. Jack and his wife, Connie, then moved to Oro Valley in 2011, where Jack was eager to serve. He signed up for the Oro Valley Parks and Recreation Advisory Board in 2012, serving as chair in 13 and 14. After his stint with the PRAB, Jack again felt he wanted to give back more. So he signed up to volunteer with the Stormwater Utility Commission in 2019, serving until 2021. We want to extend a hearty thank you and well wishes to Jack for his contributions, not only to us at the Stormwater Commission, but the town in general. Jack is a great volunteer, and we dearly miss his efforts and hope he'll find a way back to us in some form or fashion. So again, wanted to make sure we extended a warm welcome and thank you for his services.
Thank you, Mr. Spiker. My sentiments as well, and I'm glad that we filled the position very quickly. And Ed, it was a pleasure meeting with you during the interview process, and look forward to working with you as we move forward.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to working with the team.
All right, moving on to agenda item number three, discussion of meetings and events. Mr. Spiker, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Kufari. Again, we've glossed over some of these, but considering we've got so many new commissioners sitting through, I wanted to go over what some of these meetings were. You might see the Pima County Flood Control District Advisory Committee meeting here repeatedly. They meet monthly, this is a conglomeration of all the local entities and agencies within the region. So Marana, Sahuarita, Oro Valley, the city of Tucson, all get together regularly to talk with the Pima County Flood Control District, upcoming projects, CIP needs, state and federal regulation changes. So this is an avenue that is open to the public, but gives the smaller entities a seat at the table to talk at bigger issues and see things at a regional context. So just to let you guys know, that's our role in that. We also obviously have our Stormwater Regular Commission meetings here. Something different you'll see on the calendar next week is the Santa Cruz River Research Days. This is hosted by the Sonoran Institute. It's a venue for learning about research and conservation efforts while exploring the Santa Cruz River's natural and cultural resources. It's a free event. Anybody's willing to or able to participate. This year it is virtual. I believe their main focus is capital improvement projects along the Santa Cruz River. So I encourage you all to look into that. And if you're interested, sign up. It's a great amenity for Tucson. And some of the things they're doing, we're trying to emulate up here on the CDO or other parts of Tucson here. So again, I encourage you guys to participate in that event. It's certainly worthwhile.
Mr. Spiker, if I could interrupt, do you have the meetings and events open on your screen?
I do now, yes.
Okay.
So as you can see, we've got February 17th, which obviously was last month, advisory meeting. And again, those are repeated monthly, interspersed with our Stormwater Commission meetings. And you can see March 25th through the 26th next week is the Santa Cruz River Research Days. Thank you for reminding me of that, Arena.
And John, you will be presenting at Santa Cruz River Researchers Days. Do you have a, I believe it's Friday afternoon?
I will indeed. As part of my stint at Pima County, I was responsible for delivering $7 million bank protection and river park enhancement project near the confluence of the CDO, Rieto, and Santa Cruz Rivers over the Orange Grove area. Put up a large amount of bank protection there for the sand and gravel pit. So that will be a presentation I will make with the Kinley Horn design team. In addition, they're doing some heritage water presentations, some of that work down by 22nd Street in downtown, which has been a fabulous project to see come to fruition, in addition to some other projects. So again, there's some amazing work that's being done on the Santa Cruz, and again, replicated on other large water bodies throughout the region.
Thank you, Mr. Spiker. Commissioners, do you have any questions at this time? All right, hearing none, we'll move on to agenda item number 4, discussion of upcoming staff request to the town council to adopt changes to town code chapter 17, floodplain management.
Chair Kafari, can I interrupt? I see Commissioner Parker, your hand is up. Did you mean for your hand to be up?
I did. I wasn't sure how to do that, but well, I just wanted to ask Mr. Spiker, hey, John, I know once upon a time PAG had a stormwater working group. Did they cancel that? Did that go away?
Commissioner Parker, no, that did not go away. And in fact, we've been working on several fronts with the PAG watershed group. One of those is tied directly to the phase 2 small MS4 permit changes that are coming up in June and anticipated to go online October 1. We are working with them for low impact and green infrastructure project adoptions. And that's really related to stormwater harvesting, if you want to think about it that way. So we are working with the PAG group. But as far as capital improvement projects go, Commissioner Parker, it's really being drove by the Pima County Flood Control District. So although we see guidance and collaboration with the PAG working group, we tend to lean into the Pima County Flood Control District for hard infrastructure projects. and follow their lead. Pima County is also a partner of that PAG working group. So we all kind of work together, but yes, that group is still alive and kicking.
And they, that's where I was just going to wonder, do they meet on a monthly, quarterly? Like how often do they get together? It's quarterly. Okay. Yeah. Got it. Alrighty. Thank you.
And I can certainly try to add some of those meetings in. I'm going to make a little note to myself.
Chair Kufari, could you repeat item, agenda item number 4?
Yes. Moving on to agenda item number 4, discussion of upcoming staff requests to the town council to adopt changes to town code chapter 17, floodplain management. Mr. Spiker, I turn it over to you.
Thank you, Chair Kufari. I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Justin Turner here in our stormwater utility office to present this particular item. Justin?
You're on mute, Justin. You're on mute.
I'll go knock on his door.
Can you hear me now, everyone?
Yeah, we got you.
All right, so sorry about the brief technical difficulties we were having. So chapter 17, which is the subject of the staff report and to the commission, is one of the two ordinances that the stormwater utility is in part responsible for enforcing. You know, one of the chapter 7 is the floodplain management ordinance, which talks about the town's responsibility and through the building permit process to make sure new developments are reasonably safe from flooding and erosion. The other ordinance is our chapter 1524, which is the water quality ordinance, which includes the responsibilities of the Stormwater Utility Commission. All of you that are sitting here today, the rules that talk about how the commission is created is in there. And then the second half of 1524 deals with illicit discharges and the responsibility of the town to regulate the Clean Water Act. So I'll go back to chapter 17, which is what we're here to talk about today. The last time the floodplain management ordinance was updated was in 2017, shortly after I came on board. And at that time, we were trying to close a community advisory visit, an audit that we had had several years before. And at that time, we were advised to revise the former ordinance to better reflect the state ordinance, the model ordinance, and also we also wanted to include some language that would put us in a better position should we want to move forward with the community rating system. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with that, that's a way we can get recognition from FEMA for our efforts in floodplain management activities in the town. And by so doing, it allows the insurance premiums that residents in the town pay for their residential content and building flood insurance policies, that it allows for a reduction depending on your CRS scoring. So that ordinance was revised in 2017. And more recently, just this last summer, we were audited again. And there are two types of ordinance of audits. One is a visit. I think it's a consult. The CAC and CAV. The CAV is a rigorous one where they go through your files and they want to see specific examples. And the one we had this last time, this community advisory contact, was just over the phone and they just were checking in. But but as a result of that meeting, they took another look at our ordinance and says, you know, there are a few additional things that we believe you should you should take care of to make it consistent with the state model ordinance. And so we took it to heart. So we made, we're now making those changes. We're also, some of you might be, David Parker, you might've been around in the days when we were pursuing the CRS, community rating system. At that time, we realized that the cost of implementing that program was far, far greater than the small reduction in premiums that our community members would enjoy. So we recommended to the commission and to the town engineer that we not pursue that. And so with the current regulations that are before you, the revision 6 regulations, we're undoing those. We're deleting the CRS language and those additional tracking and administrative functions that we would need to do in order to remain in high standing in the CRS. So we're unwinding that portion of it. And also, lastly, we're making some significant revisions to our drainage criteria manual. The last time it was updated was in 2010, and now we're doing a complete rewrite. In the coming months, staff will present a report on those efforts, but that's not for today. But there are changes in that document, draft document, that need to be reflected in the ordinance. So those are the things we're changing. So we're getting rid of duplicative language. We're getting so that item number one, I guess off to the left, is the definitions. We're fixing some of the language, and then we're changing the threshold for the item two, the threshold for what is a regulatory discharge. Right now, it stands that water courses with a peak 100-year discharge of 50 CFS, anything larger than that is regulatory. That means they need floodplain use permits, they need to do erosion hazard setbacks, all manner of things. Finished floors have to be up a certain height, et cetera. And we need to track them. Oral Valley is anomalous in this regard, in that all of the other communities around us have 100 CFS threshold. Anything smaller than that is non-regulatory. People can do pretty much what they want as long as they don't obstruct and divert water. And during grading permit application, grading permit review, we make sure that those flows are accommodated safely. So we still have a chance to review and to direct people in the right direction for these smaller flows. But we want to be consistent with our neighbors. We don't want to put on additional burden to our community. And this is something that the development community has asked us to do, and we're going to follow suit. And I think it's a good idea. And then there was also some language in that third bullet item about how we handle building permits in effective zone, flood zone A's, AE's, FEMA floodplains. There are a number of them in the town, and through the conditional letter of map revision or map revision process, these floodplain delineations can be changed. But the lead time on those official FEMA changes could be a year, and the development community works much faster than that. And we are under pressure to allow the development to go forward go forward only if it can be shown that the new construction is reasonably safe from flooding, and that we can do. And so we have new language in here that allows building permits to be issued during those interim periods. More specifically, if the improvements, let's say soil cement bank protection along Big Wash, for example, if that has already been constructed, the building pads are elevated, we have elevation certificates or as-built grading plans showing that the new building sites are reasonably safe from flooding, then the ordinance, the new language in the ordinance, allows us to move forward with issuing building permits, not certificates of occupancy and other restrictions, but the development community can move forward at their risk, going vertical, waiting for FEMA to make the final determination. And there's, of course, there's the risk of always buying flood insurance, et cetera, but it allows the town engineer to issue permits with the knowledge that the building site is indeed physically safe from flooding erosion. It's in other words, the physical floodplain has been changed, but the paper floodplain hasn't caught up with it yet. And so we can move forward. So that's, we've been reacting to requests from the development community, that the item number two and item number three, and I think we're doing a good job here, acting safely with a community-wide approach. These are permitting policies that are in place with Pima County, although they're not written. And I believe Ann Moynihan at the district is currently writing these up now. But again, that's what we're doing here in this ordinance. And it's being given to you as an advisory capacity. And we invite you to take a look at it in your leisure in the next, let's say, 2 or 3 weeks or so, by the end of the month or the very first part of the next month. If you have any questions or additional suggestions, David Parker, Commissioner Parker, you've sat in these desks over here, and you're very familiar with this. Chairman Kafari, I know you have a lot of experience, and other commissioners, I'm sorry, I don't know your backgrounds, but if you have some ideas on how better to prepare these, I invite you to take a look and let us know. And in the meantime, while you look at it, as the staff report alludes to, this document has made its way to Phoenix, where the division manager for Arizona Department of Water Resources, Brian Cosson, and his right-hand person, Rebecca Peterson, are reviewing it again. They were the ones that gave us some suggestions, specific suggestions on wording, and they were ecstatic about the opportunity to look at it again before it goes to mayor and council sometime later this spring, after we have a few more chances to make some revisions. So this is just a heads up. If any of you have any specific questions now, I'll try to answer them as best I can, or you can put it in an email, send it to my boss, John Spiker, and he'll route it through appropriately. But
Chair Kafari?
The gradual changes we're doing.
If I may interrupt, we have Commissioner Mattson with his hand raised, and then Commissioner Parker second with his hand raised.
Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. I went through the whole ordinance, and I noticed that on 17-6, there's the appeal and variances. And it says there's a floodplain board. Is that an internal board here, or is it a countywide board, or what's the composition of that board? And what's our role in that board? The commission, the stormwater, or the city?
That's your council.
It's the council.
I believe if my recollection of 1524, the water quality ordinance, and the ordinance that establishes the commission, I believe that document gives the review board responsibility to all of you, to the commissioners, to our Stormwater Utility Commission. And John Spiker, if I'm wrong, or David Parker, if I'm wrong, pipe up. But that's my understanding, that if there is an appeal board, it goes before the commissioners or their representative. So that's you. Have we ever done it? To my knowledge, we've never done it. It's never gotten to that point where we have an appeal that is intended to overturn an opinion of the town engineer. Town engineers, from the years of experience I've known the current town engineer and his three predecessors, I've known all of them, and they've all been reasonable. And to my knowledge, there's never been an appeal that had to go to the extent where it goes to a board. But that board is, to my knowledge, Commissioner Mattson, is you, all of you, or your representative. I will confirm that. I will look at it, but that's my reading. And Mr. Spiker, you have a better idea. Let me
know. Or is it we review it and then advisory, or is it similar to a board of zoning appeal?
No,
in a zoning case or in the planning?
No, you would review they have, make a recommendation back to the town engineer.
Okay, so it would be an advisory appeal.
Yes, strictly advisory.
Okay.
Third party, arm length advisory. Is it reasonable? And then there's, if you go through the ordinance, it gives the conditions under which an appeal is reasonable. Like no other options available, you know, safe to the public, et cetera.
So we will certainly follow up on that, Commissioner.
Yeah, I believe that's the case.
Verify that with the town attorneys, but that's my interpretation as well, that the floodplain board of Oro Valley, maybe that's language that needs to be cleaned up to specify the flood or the stormwater utility commission.
I like that idea, John. Remind me.
Yep.
Thank you.
And Commissioner Parker, I believe you had your hand up.
Well, and I think it's been a while since I've read the ordinance, but as I recall, there are only two actions in it that the utility commission was responsible potentially for. And one was if there was a fee reduction request for the religious or education purposes, the 25%, the utility commission makes the decision on after the staff comes up with a recommendation of how much, the commission then agrees or disagrees, and they're the ones who make that decision. And then as you all brought up, Mr. Spiker and Mr. Turner, I believe it's correct, the flood panel was synonymous with the utility commission doing that too, so that probably needs to be clarified in the ordinance, but those were the only two.
Okay. And
the one, and go ahead, I'm sorry.
Commissioner Parker, you the third item that the commissioners are responsible for are reviewing
the budget.
And recommending the budget.
That's right.
Or rather, more specifically, our fee, our utility fee, whether or not the $4.50 fee is should be kept or changed. So that's third thing that you have to do every year, and we bring that before you.
And that's one of my notes for later was I was going to ask, is that been done for this year's budget or not? But that's a later question. But on your chapter 17, the CRS, Justin, we started that with Fritz way back when, because Marana had, I think they were rated 9 or 8. And we were kind of like, well, we can beat them. So we were giving that a shot. But what Fritz had said was he thought he was of the impression that just everything we were currently doing in the utility was going to be sufficient to get us a CRS rating of 9 or 8 without having to put any additional funding into it. I'm assuming from what you're saying that he was mistaken there, that we were going to have to do a whole lot of additional administrative stuff.
I can quickly answer that. You are correct that my predecessor in this office, Fernando Fritz Laus, was correct that by submitting the documentation that he put together, and I made some additional changes, you would get a ranking of 9, which is like for Boy Scouts, you get a tenderfoot, right?
Merit badge.
A tenderfoot, I don't know what the Girl Scout equivalent is, but a tenderfoot, which is the number 9, and you get a very small reduction in maybe 5% reduction. But there's only, I believe there's 128 policies in all of the town. And the only policies that are would be eligible for a change would be the A zones. The shaded zone X, all the ones that are behind the levee, those don't get a, they already have a preferred rate. And so we looked at the cost, we, you know, for all of the policies in effect, and it was several hundred dollars is all we would get for an entire year. And then looking at the annual reporting requirements, we have to show our outreach. We have to look at all of our floodplain use permits. It was an enormous undertaking. It would probably have taken 40 hours of you know, dedicated effort on top of, you know, review all the way up. So that did not seem cost effective with our limited resources. And the CRS program that Moran is involved in, and certainly our I want to say our sister community, the Pima County Regional Flood Control yeah. District, they are ranked, I think they have a ranking of like 2, and maybe they're going to get number 1. They're in the top 4 or 5 communities in the CRS program in the entire United States. They are to be hugely congratulated in their effort, and the things that they are doing trickle down to us, the outreach information they have and the ordinance language they have and the procedures that they have developed in order to gain that recognition, we are grabbing onto and utilizing in our own community, but without, sadly, without having to do a lot of additional effort. We only have a staff of 5 in all of us, and they have staffs of 100. They have dedicated people. So it was decided upon that we would pull that back out.
Okay.
That report's available should somebody want to look at it as the cost breakdown. But yes, David, you did a good job getting it started. Unfortunately, I unraveled it.
Oh, Justin. The other thing I wanted to bring up was just real quick that 50 CFM up to 100 CFM. I think that's an outstanding idea, as long as you can, ensure that every one of the washes that becomes unregulated, that there's no safety issues, which you said that's already covered. So
yeah.
I would, you know, as a advisory commissioner, I think that's an outstanding idea.
Okay.
I see John smiling. I think Joe smiling. I think he agrees.
Definitely.
Well, that's all I have for to report. Thank you all.
Thank you.
And John and Justin, I brought it up with you earlier this week, John, the definition of special flood hazard area. I may email you guys, I got to come up with a definition for that in order for it to include local floodplains, which essentially would be zone X. I think right now it's a little too specific, and I could envision seeing you guys getting bit in the butt with that in the future. But I'll just have some minor language adjustment to that as a suggestion.
Thank you. Look forward to it.
All right. Any other comments from the commissioners? All right. Seeing none, we'll move on to agenda item number 5, report and discussion of the stormwater utilities cartograph, GIS integration and asset management procedures. Mr. Spiker, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Kafari and commissioners. As requested at the last Stormwater Utility Commission, we brought forward Scott Bennett, our GIS analyst, and Jane Hutchins, our stormwater inspector, to give a brief presentation and demonstration of our current asset management and stormwater pollution prevention plan, inspection program, and asset management program. The stormwater utility's got 3 important responsibilities related to stormwater quality, stormwater quantity, and operation and maintenance of the town's drainage infrastructure. The overall goal of the water quality mission is to ensure that discharges from the municipal separate storm sewer system, that's our MS4, does not cause or contribute to exceedances of surface water quality standards set by the Environmental Protection Agency and enforced by Arizona Department of Environmental Quality. The primary goal of our water quality mission is to continue efforts during the building permit review process to minimize threat to life and property from flooding. To those ends, the stormwater utility has a combination of Cartograph operations management software, Cartograph OMS, and asset and work management software. In addition, we've got our ESRI ArcGIS software, which is a geographic information system for working with maps and geographic information. Our asset and SWIP management processes include data collection, asset conditions, gauge of performance, and establishing a record of inspection event and its recommendations for repairs and maintenance for those assets. With regard to data collection, to date, the utility staff has captured almost 4,900 assets within the town. That represents about 80% of the known assets. So we're still gathering new assets and putting them into the system. Typical drainage assets captured include catch basins, curb inlets, storm drain pipes, drainage channels, culverts, detention basins, and channel outfalls, in addition to spatial data related to residential and commercial construction, are also captured in our GIS database, and SWIP inspections, again, our stormwater pollution prevention inspections, are scheduled and recorded in a Cartograph. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Scott Bennett and Jane Hutchins to run through some examples and show you a little bit about the work that they do and what we're capturing over here at the town. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Scott Bennett.
Hello, all. I think John's bringing up the presentation. I'm Scott Bennett. I'm the GIS analyst for the utility. And here we are on the first slide. So on the first slide of this presentation, we have a townwide map displaying an inventory of all public and private drainage assets to be inspected and managed by the stormwater utility. And we inspect all assets, public and private. We manage and maintain all public assets. We make the owners of private assets aware of any deficiencies that exist on their assets and cite the applicable town statutes in a letter of opportunity to correct that is addressed to the owner. And John, if you could move to the next slide. Here are some examples of some typical examples of the assets we track and manage through our day-to-day operations. We have 1,794 catch basins and curb inlets. We have 1,188 storm drain pipes. We have 1,037 drainage channels. These are constructed drainage channels that were made basically as a result of a new subdivision or a commercial complex. We have 563 culverts, and we have 225 detention basins. And we also are required by the state to map and track what's going on at some of the outfalls, particularly public outfalls, but we have mapped both public and private outfalls. And we have 46 of those in our database. John, if you could move to the next slide. So let's zero in on one of our assets in our database. This is a curb cut inlet, storm inlet 428. That is the Cartograph, that is the unique Cartograph ID that we use to track that particular asset. And this is located between Moore Road and Tangerine on North Copper Spring Trail. If we go to the next slide. So on March 19th of 2018, we received a phone call from a resident basically informing us that this particular asset was damaged. And as you can see, clearly it was. And so I went out and conducted an inspection. If you go to the next slide. This is the task that you would create in Cartograph for that inspection. So this will give you a specific record associated with that asset that is forever in memoriam. We'll see this record always associated with that asset, even after it's retired or replaced. And as you can see, the inspection cost was $57, and that's based on 2 hours of labor expense managing this. And if we move on to the next slide, we'll see the actual inspection record. This is also a record associated with that asset. So that's the beauty of an asset management system like Cartograph, is you always have these records associated with your assets as you manage them in a day-to-day basis. If we move on to the, and you'll notice also that the inspection was given an OCI of 53, which was the operator, the overall condition index. That's a way of basically rating our infrastructure, and we can then do a query on our infrastructure and find everything that is below a certain rating and apply maintenance as required. So if we move on to the next slide, this is the request to the operations division for a repair. So this is another unique record associated with that asset that we can find. And this is basically how we get the information to the operations division so that they know, hey, we need to go out and repair this asset. If you move to the next slide, this is the actual task that the operations division created to go out and repair. And as you can see, the cost was a little over almost $1,800, and they track labor, they track equipment, and there's other costs associated with it too. I can't see the actual figure because the presentation is obscuring it, but there are other costs associated with it, and I think that's where the material costs were built into. If we move into the onto the next slide, so this is a post repair inspection task that Jane happened to conduct an inspection about a year after it was repaired. And she visited it and gave it an OCI of 100. And so it's basically, it's operating completely as expected and also looks as expected. And if we move on to the next slide, there's her inspection report. And then if we move on to the next slide after that, this is what the current status of the asset is. This was taken about 2 weeks ago. And it still looks pretty pristine compared to that. So that's a synopsis of how we manage inspection and repair of our assets in Cartograph. If we move on to the next slide, I'll show you how we actually get them into the database, or one of the ways actually. So this slide is showing the Moore Road extension. This is a public road that was done as a result of Altera at Vistoso Trails and Valley Vista, two new subdivisions along this roadway. And what we did was we requested a drone flight from the police station. The police station owns a drone. They own multiple drones, actually. We send a request to IT. I create a map with a box around the area of interest. I send it as a PDF to IT, and they send it over to the police department, and the police department then flies the area that we are interested in. We did this in November of 2020, and this resulted in many new public assets, including the roadway. We have 19 new catch basins and curb inlets. We have 9 new culverts. We have 6 new drainage channels, and I believe 8 or 9 new storm drain pipes. And so that's one of the ways, this in conjunction with improvement plans and georeferencing those plans and overlaying them on an aerial, are really how we get all the assets into our database. So if we move on to the next slide, This is sort of an introduction on how we manage both commercial and residential construction sites. We are inspecting these on a fairly routine basis, and that red polygon that is in between Moore and Tangerine is called La Cañada Ridge. That is one of the construction sites that Jane is managing, and that's a new subdivision. And in our cartograph database, or it's called SWIP-6. SWIP stands for Stormwater Pollution Prevention Plan, and it's just got a unique number called 6. So this happens to be number 6. So that's how we refer to it in cartograph. And I believe Jane will be walking you through how she might handle a potential violation at one of these sites.
Great. Thanks, Scott. Commissioners, my name is Jane Hutchins. I do conduct the SWIP inspections for the town. We currently have 17 active building sites where I go out and take a look and do inspections, take a look at notebooks, SWIP notebooks, which is the Bible for each work site. And part of determining who gets a SWIP inspection is based upon either 1 acre of land, or if it's less than 1 acre, it's got to be part of a contiguous plan of development. And that's really what we capture and what we begin when we're taking a look at the our SWIP inspections. I do all of my SWIP inspections as unannounced. So we go and take a look at this. And if you look at the screen, our pre-correction inspection report, I conducted that on January 27, 2020. And if you take a look at the further to the right, you'll see that I made I found something that is of great concern because I scored it a half star and an OCI of 1. So if we can go to the next slide, John. Thank you. If you take a look, this is La Cañada Road and Cabo de Cabo, which is next to the Lehman Academy and Sunquist Road. Part of going to doing the inspection, I did notice that there was a lot of track out. And track out is one of the issues that we tend to get quite a bit. If you could kind of go into the photo a little bit more, John, I'd like to let you know the reason why we're so cognizant and so concerned about track out is because if you take a look at that bike lane, that could be a potential hazard for the town. And that sediment also, too, is something that we look at because of the long-term accumulative effect of sediment in our storm channels and in our basins and our inlets. So we're trying to minimize this on a constant basis. In fact, we pretty much on almost a lot of the construction sites, we have track issues a lot of times with track out, concrete washout, and garbage and debris. And so because of this being a major thoroughfare, we needed to respond quickly. And if you go to the next slide, part of what triggers when I observe this kind of a correction is that I will contact the project superintendent very quickly and let them know of what I found and request, because this was in a right-of-way, we requested that an immediate correction occur. And so the project superintendent informed me because of the location, there's not a lot of times with construction entryways, a lot of times shaker plates or rock is used to construct construction areas. But because this is already a paved major thoroughfare, the only thing that they could do was primarily to offer street sweeping. And so that's what they did. And the post-correction inspection that I conducted February 4th, we gave them a little bit of time because sometimes they need some time to schedule street sweepers. They did a great job, if you can go to the next photo, of cleaning it up. So they removed a lot of the sediment that was in the bike and lane and also into their construction area. And there's probably a little bit of staining, and that's just small sediment that's gotten into the finer parts of the pavement. That's not really of any concern or violation of the construction general permit requirements, but they did, like I said, a really outstanding job of cleaning that up and taking care of that. And that, I believe, is the last photo. I'm done with my presentation. Do you have any questions?
It looks like Justin has a question or a statement.
Am I unmuted, everybody?
Okay. Go ahead.
Scott, Jane, John, thank you so much for the presentation. Looking at these, I don't want to call it a violation, this concern, I hope that doesn't give you the impression that we're dealing with lots of problems. Jane goes out most mornings, does two or three inspections, and finds there's no problems whatsoever. She's done a good job of right at the outset of construction project at the kickoff meetings to say, listen, we are all here together. Let's see if we can't make sure that you're taking care of your responsibilities with the state permit, their construction general permit, and make sure that the town is fully adhering to our MS4 permit. And so you do your work and we'll do ours. And if I see something, she says, if I see something that is slightly out of bounds, I'll let you know. Likewise, if we're doing something wrong, you let us know. So it's a cooperative effort. And then, like I said, virtually all of our inspections, the contractors are doing a wonderful job, and she'll immediately send out an email with an inspection report that says, thank you, as of this inspection, you appear to be in compliance. And that means a lot to the contractors and their subs to know that, that it's not silent. The efforts that they put forth are recognized, and they at least have a passing grade. They don't have to worry about, oh gosh, is the town going to come down because there is some trash out here, or there is some oil dripping or concrete or something like that. We're reasonable in our expectations with what the contractors are to do. After all, this is the construction general permit is a permit to allow pollution. It is a get out of jail free card, if you will. The contractors can pollute, provided they do the best they can. It's the most practicable method. I'm not able to come up with that term at the moment.
Maximum extent practical.
Right. And so as long as they are doing the most they can at that moment, they can pollute. But they don't push us on that. So they'd like to hear that what they're doing is acceptable, that if the state comes out, that it's very likely that they too will find the construction site in good standing. So it's a active relationship that Jane has with the contractors, with the primary contractor, the owners, and all of their subs. All the subs are working for everybody else. It's the primes who are the limiting factor, or at least there's just one individual or a couple of individuals, but it's the stucco folks, the framers, et cetera. They're all shared. And if we can inform them, let them know that they're not to dump concrete washout, or when they wash out their plaster machines, don't dump it in the street, and for heaven's sakes, don't just throw their lunch garbage inside the culvert, etc. We've worked with those folks, and I think they're doing a wonderful job, and fortunately we have some excellent staff. Scott and Jane are doing a good job, but what helps us do this is this cartograph thing that we have. We have cartograph and we have ESRI. And there's been a substantial amount of money and effort put into locating these 5,000 assets. But we are reasonably certain, based on that the data that we've collected, that we are in compliance and we are doing a good job with our program. Many of us talk to our communities next door, and I don't think they have as good a program as us. And I think we've been told that by the state. We are really at the cutting edge, and that's a large part. Joseph, I'm sorry. I think we're better than the county in some ways, but our ability to do that came about because of work that Amy Ramsey and Paul Kiesler did early on, and recognized that this department needed to expand. We needed to get the staff that would enable us to make sure that we were fully compliant. And we asked for that increase from 50 cents to $4.50, which is what we have now. And so that effort, that foresight, made it possible to bring in the staff, the five people we have here, or I think we just got on three for heaven's sake, but to be able to bring in the staff, to have this GIS capability among many other things. So I think this presentation today, what they're showing, is a culmination of about 5 years of effort to get us here. And I think it's a well-running machine. And I think we're going to be recognized in the future. But anyway, thank you all.
Thank you.
If I may add one thing Justin touched upon regarding the drone flights. Is that okay? Justin touched upon the stormwater utility fee, and we also utilize these drone flights to calculate the stormwater utility fee for new commercial construction. And so that's also been a big help to us.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Parker, I see your hand is raised.
Yeah, I just wanted to first say, that map is very impressive, and you guys put a lot of effort into it, a lot of work, and you're absolutely right. I would be shocked if anybody else has the capability that the town has in regard to tracking and monitoring and knowing exactly what's out there. So that is extremely impressive what you guys have put together. I had just a couple questions. One I wanted to ask was, I'm starting to get my brain wrapped around stormwater again, so I apologize for all of the questions. I won't ask as many in the future, I hope. But one is, all of the assets, the infrastructure assets, is there a regulatory requirement in how often you have to inspect them? I know when you get something damaged and you get a phone call in, you're going to go out and look at it like you did, Scott. But is there a recurring requirement in either the MS4 or?
I'll take that answer. Yes, there is, Commissioner Parker. As part of our BMPs, as part of the MS4 permit, we have tasked ourselves with reviewing 20% of all our assets in a given year.
Gotcha.
The reason for that number being selected is we hope to, in a five-year window, get to every single piece of infrastructure that the town knows of. So, you divide up 20%. In a five-year window, and that gives us 100% clarity. Justin, you want to follow up on that?
Yes, the water quality ordinance requires us to be vigilant for illicit discharges, that IDDE, illicit discharge detection and elimination. So not only is our staff looking at construction sites for pollution sources, but also these assets, public and private. So we're looking for the physical, so structural integrity of the structure, and then there's the operability. And then the third thing, that part of the IDDE, is there any pollution going on? Is there some illicit discharge? Is there some stained water? Is there something at that location that would be of concern? And so, yeah, we didn't mention that that's one of the things she looks at, but that is, so it's the IDDE program. And John Spiker, you're right, stormwater management program document says that we are to look at these assets 20% each year, and to make sure they're operable and then they're clean. Both the floodplain ordinance and the water quality ordinance requires the owner of assets, be they water quality assets or stormwater assets, quantity assets, to properly maintain them. And it gives us the ability to go in and compel them, the owners, to bring it into operability. So we have that capability. And by golly, you know, we have to do it for our own assets as well. We can't just be out looking for everybody else. We have to set a good example, and I think we do.
Jane, you're a busy person because you either inspect 1,000 of them every year. So
I'll give it my best shot, but I think I might be challenged a little bit. But you know, it's something I love to do. Actually, it's a great part of our program.
It's nice to get out and about the town too.
It
and
is.
And then the second one, just real quick, was on the SWIPs and the CGP. Is it still the stormwater utility that is approving the SWIPs when they come in? And then, so Justin or John, one of you approve them and give them to Jane, and then she's the one who does the inspections?
Yes, that's okay. Correct.
Got it. That was it. Thank you.
Commissioner Brown, do you have a question?
Yes, I just have a quick question for either Justin or Scott. Did you mention what other town departments have access or data sharing through the Cartograph system?
The entire town is linked to Cartograph. Some divisions, I think everybody could see it if they want to, but I think there are some divisions that don't necessarily realize that or have a need or a desire to see it. But if you want to see the data and you make it known to IT, they will let you see it.
And
in particular, Commissioner Brown, the town of Marana is using the Cartograph system. We don't share data. We have some of this as restricted information, but we are willing and have shared certain portions of it before, particularly as it relates to the GIS information. We're constantly pulling data from the county, from the state, and all available resources should they make that available to us. So our platforms are cross-pollinated with data sets here. So we're not responsible to maintain all of it, but it's a shared resource that we like to try to offer up and utilize ourselves.
Thank you.
Chairman Kufari, I have a question. I apologize. The raise hand option is not active on my end.
Go ahead.
So just a quick one. Going back to the GIS, if on the example that Mr. Bennett shared of the damaged asset, when you do the inspections, is there a process that goes back to, I guess, look at root cause, how that item may have been damaged? The reason I ask is looking into just cost control, if it was damaged as a matter of just wear and tear, or if some other aspect that caused that damage for a recoupment of that cost.
I think I can help answer that question. So when these situations arise, we triage them and we decide whether or not it's something that can be just simply taken care of. It's relatively minor. And we can have our operations division. We have our streets folks here at 680. I think those of you who've been here know we have an operations yard with tractors and bulldozer and all manner of equipment. And I believe two of that staff are paid for by the stormwater utility. You'll see that in our budget every year, and likewise that equipment. So if, for simple situations like this, I don't believe we do much in terms of trying to figure out how that got broken. It's probably a vehicle drove over it after there was some erosion. But on the more complicated situations, then the triage directs the problem to John Spiker, and he will make a decision as to what should we do about helping prevent this situation occurring again. Do we need some sort of an engineering analysis, a scour analysis, or some sort of causation document so that we can, when we rebuild it, we can do a better job of protecting that asset, maybe put a deeper toe down. I don't see a toe on that edge. It looks like what happened is the channel degraded and somebody drove over it and busted it. So in the future, what we should do is ask that whoever builds these things have a thickened edge, a concrete header, if you will. And I don't see that on this thing. It's likely there, maybe not. So John Spiker is responsible for making a determination as to whether or not the problem will end up on my desk or my counterpart, John Lynch, former Commissioner Lynch, works here. And he's a civil engineer with 40 years experience in designing and construction managing major drainage infrastructure. So we'll do an analysis, my job, and then there'll be a design, which is John Lynch's side of things, and then it will go either out to construction by a jock, a job on demand. Is that what a jock stands for? Job
order contractor.
Something, job order contractors, whether it would go out to a jock or it would be done by our own staff, depending on whether Amy says we have money to do it. So it's everybody gets involved in fixing the more complicated situations. This one, understandably, is very simple. But you can imagine, come on by and we'll show you our sort of hall of shame of things that we need to be addressing. And that's what we're doing actively. We have a list of shovel-ready construction documents that are addressing each one of these and are trying to get enough so that we can plan for future expenditures through our program. So that's what we do. So yes, Commissioner Thomas, we do have a mechanism for exercising cost controls. And unfortunately, this example didn't really let us do that. I think we can have others if should there be interest. But yes, we
Understood. I mean, this is kind of wasn't really an applicable example, but I was just trying to understand the root cause analysis and cost control element.
Yeah,
I appreciate
it. The nice thing I'd like to add on to that a little bit, Commissioner Thomas. The nice thing about Cartograph is all of these problems are captured and they're routed appropriately so we can get the divisions or the resources set up to analyze it should we need that. And you weren't here for the last meeting, Commissioner Thomas, but the problem we saw at Catalina Shadows and was presented at the last meeting, that would have been something, again, it wasn't a simple fix. It did need to have a little more thorough analyses on what caused the problem and what are the solution sets to fix it, because there's many ways to skin a cat here. So we want to appreciate those and make sure it's well thought out before we just execute.
Understood. Thanks all.
Are there any more questions from the commissioners? All right. Thank you all. That was very informative, and it's good to always see the back end of things. So very nice. And that looks a lot easier than what the county uses. That's all I'll say. All right, moving on to agenda item number 6, discussion of 2021 Stormwater Utility Commission field trip delivery alternatives. Mr. Spiker, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Kafari. Commissioners, again, due to COVID-19, we had to cancel last year's field trip. And again, due to that same ongoing pandemic, there's still restrictions in place for in-person meetings here. With that hurdle still in place, we still want to offer the opportunity for the commissioners to get out and visit places within Oro Valley that give a better understanding for the broad range of activities typically performed by stormwater. And we're more than comfortable to give you guys image presentations, even maybe a virtual tour, but there's nothing quite like visiting these places in person. But due to the restrictions, we have no idea when that time frame is going to be lifted. We assume sometime this summer, but I can't guarantee anything. So we wanted to place this particular staff item on the agenda just for discussion to hear if you guys had any thoughts, ideas of how we might be able to meet the goal of giving you guys the opportunity to visit these sites with the COVID restrictions in place. So with that, again, I'll turn it over to the commissioners for any thoughts, input.
My thought would be, while it is nice to get everybody, you know, together, obviously we can't. And I think you may want to open it up since we do have three new commissioners here. Maybe scheduling one-on-one tours or something like that could be an option for them. Obviously, you know, Joan and I could do the same if we felt the need, but for the time being, at least to mark it off as a 2021 field trip, setting up individual ones with them could be beneficial.
I see Commissioner Mattson has his hand raised.
Yes, I would think maybe possibly in the fall, by that time with the vaccines and everything, we might be able to, rather than on a one-to-one basis as a group, because we probably generated a lot of different questions and it'd be more worthwhile. So maybe we should put it off to the fall when it's a little cooler anyway.
Appreciate the comments, Commissioner Mattson. That's exactly what we attempted to do last year, was zero in on maybe that October timeframe. It's still really nice out and again, still gives the commissioners a hands-on feel or appreciation for some of these problems.
I would just second that. I think having us all get together and, you know, getting one of the Coyote Run vans, if we can, to go around is nice, to where we get to talk with you all and interact with each other.
I would just like to add, Chairman, that this is, I guess, my fourth year, and I had the benefit of the field trips a couple of times before, and they're really invaluable. They really are, and the logic of having it in the spring, obviously, that makes more sense. You've seated new commissioners. This will be my last year serving, but I really would like to advocate for maybe shooting for an October date to get everyone here, you know, together in one spot to host the field trip as, you know, as it's usually done.
Appreciate those comments, Commissioner Brown. That's was really our line of thinking too. It seemed like the fall seemed to be an appropriate time. So we'll try to gather our thoughts. And certainly if there's more comments, we'll take those, but that seems to be a direction we can certainly head in.
Okay, great.
Yeah, Ed Thomas, I guess I agree. You know, the fall would be great where we could get everybody as a group, but in the interim, I'm happy to go on individuals just to kind of get myself up to speed, probably as the newest and least knowledgeable member. So if that opportunity comes up, I'd be happy to go do some individuals, but I can defer to the fall. So I'll kind of let the leadership team, decide how you want to do that.
And certainly for those of you that may not be as experienced, we are always available for you to reach out to. Again, we can do one-on-one meetings and talk to you about things we do more regularly, more in depth. So for those of you that may not be as familiar with what we do here, we're more than welcome to field those questions and those visits. So certainly Commissioner Mattson, Commissioner Thomas, if you guys want to go out and spend some time with us, we're more than willing to accommodate that. Just wear a mask, please. That's all I have. So again, I appreciate all your comments. Thank you.
All right, thank you all. Hearing no other comments, we'll move on to agenda item number 7, discussion and possible action regarding the cancellation of the April 15th, 2021 Stormwater Utility Commission regular session meeting. Mr. Spiker and staff, is there anything pressing that you would need us to take action on? Maybe the changes of the floodplain management ordinance?
I don't believe so, Commissioner or Chair Kafari.
All right. Are there any other comments from the commissioners?
Chairman, Mr. Spiker mentioned the monsoon prediction update that's supposed to come out in April. So is that something that we're planning then to address at the May meeting?
Commissioner Brown, yes, it is. I believe the date will be April 21st for that monsoon forecast meeting. So I don't believe we would meet that time frame to put an agenda item together. So the May meeting seems appropriate.
Chairman, I move to cancel the April meeting.
Discussion item. I'd just like to ask about budget. I know that historically what the budget's approved in May, for the 21-22 stormwater budget, has that been anything that you know we could get a look at? I'm assuming that the not needing to raise the fee, having been through 2 fee raises, I'm assuming that not needing to raise it this year has already been approved by the commission and submitted back in the fall. Yeah, but it would be nice to get a look at it before it's approved. I'm not sure if that's a no-no or with what the schedule is. I'm assuming it's not a public document yet.
Commissioner Parker, we can provide you with the 5-year projection we did back in August, September to do the annual review. And not a lot has changed since then, okay. Except for what gets changed quite a bit in, I think, our stormwater is our projects. And so we have 2 projects moving forward, CIP projects in next year's budget, pending outside revenue sources. But we can definitely go back and provide you with the notes and the documentation for the last rate review from August. And not very much has changed except for the inclusion of these 2 new projects that our Stormwater Commission has done a very good job of outlining and designing.
Perfect. If that's okay, I'd love to see it. Great seeing you, Ms. Ramsey.
Commissioner Mattson, do you have a question?
Yes. I also was concerned about the budget and also the fact that, and maybe Councilman Green can give some insight on this, we're supposed to be receiving some money from the federal government, additional money, and are we going to be part of that or on a priority list or anything? Are there any projects that we would like to see on the priority?
So except for speaking about stormwater funding and projects, I think we're not allowed to talk about the general budget in this forum. But the stormwater under our current format is to be self-funded.
I think that's 1524.
Okay, thank you.
Part of it.
I'm still learning.
That's okay, Commissioner Mattson.
That's all right.
And again, I don't believe, Commissioner Mattson, you were at that budget meeting either. So for those of you that do desire that 5-year outlook, we can certainly make that available to you.
Thank you.
And we, commissioners, one of the things I can also suggest is if you would like to set up the one-on-one with John to go over the services, we can definitely review the stormwater budget from a one-to-one perspective too. And I'd be glad to attend as well.
Perfect.
Thank you, Amy.
All right, I believe that there is a motion on the floor from Ms. Brown to cancel the April 15th meeting. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. So moved. The April 15th meeting is canceled. Moving on to future agenda items. I think we mentioned a few during this meeting. We want to see the monsoon update. I would like to add the floodplain management ordinance, any updates to that as well before it goes to council, if possible. And whatever staff decides as usual. There are any other comments from the commissioners?
Chairman, I have one question. On is the cartograph, so that's fascinating, and I'm wondering if it's evolving. Will there be substantial changes to the data sets that are in cartograph right now? Is that something that we should be revisiting, maybe quarterly, or have another maybe shorter staff presentation on the status of cartograph and its utilization?
We can certainly go into more depth on that, Commissioner Brown. Again, we just scratched the surface on that, but certainly Scott and Jane have been collecting inordinate amount of data.
Yeah.
So we certainly have more to share. And we presented, I believe, last fall on the floodplain inquiry map, and that's a part of the data sets we've been collecting and coordinating with some of our regional partners. So there's certainly more to share if you desire to see more.
So I do. I find it a benefit. It doesn't have to be maybe as in-depth as today's presentation was. But boy, I think it's great to revisit and shine a spotlight on what staff's been doing in this regard. So I would like to see that.
And I would like to ask about for a potential future agenda item. Doesn't have to be in May, but and this is just my head getting wrapped around stormwater again. There was an issue with first flush that was being looked at back then, the current first flush technology and what our first flush requirement was going to be in the drainage criteria manual. It would be interesting, I think, and probably beneficial to hear where the town is at on that quality requirement of what we're requiring new construction to include as first flush. Are we doing the centrifuges or the filters and the curb inlets or whatever it would be, and what the current requirement is. So that's not a have to be done in May, but maybe in a future one. I would be interested. I'm not sure about other commissioners.
Thank you, Commissioner Parker. And that's actually some information we've been trying to dig in on ourselves. We've implemented a few things. We've seen some things work and some things not work. Also, our partners at the City of Tucson and Pima County have been working, as I mentioned, on a low-impact development and green infrastructure program to kind of deal with first flush waters and offer some residual benefits to that. So we can certainly dig up some information in that regard, Commissioner Parker.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all. Any other?
Actually, Commissioner Kafari, I'm sorry, I'm on mute.
Please.
I had one quick one. During the Community Academy, there was several discussions about future annexations, ones that are either underway or that are planned. Is it worthy of considering the future of what some of those annexations might do in terms of content for the commission? Can I get some free planning on that and be proactive on that?
Commissioner Thomas, we've attempted to present some of those projects before. And we've been directed to advise you guys to attend the Planning and Zoning Commissions. We're a little reluctant to present information that they're in control of. And we don't want to be duplicative either. So a lot of that information is available on the CED's web pages, and we can certainly guide you to those. Okay. We are involved in that pretty heavily. But again, we've been advised to direct your comments and questions toward the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Understood. Thank you.
All right. Moving on to an adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I move we adjourn.
Is there a second?
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. We'll see you all. Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, John, Justin, Eugene, Amy, everybody.